Let's pick up in chapter 30 in the book of Genesis, all right? And it says here, now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. And Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he says, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of your womb? And she said, here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her that she may bear on my knees, that through her I too may have children. So she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore a son. And Rachel said, God has vindicated me, and has indeed heard my voice, and has given me a son. Therefore she named him Dan. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. So Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed. And she named him Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took her maid Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, how fortunate! So she named him Gad. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, happy am I, for women will call me happy. So she named him Asher. Okay, before we go any further, you've heard of the arms race. Well, here's a population race. Here's a situation where you see where this jealousy and this envy is going now. Now, back in those days, as a matter of fact, some of my reading, I read that 800 years before Moses was even on the scene, there was a king. His name is Arphiel. And I think in Genesis 14, his name is Hamrul Abai, whatever his name is. Anyway, this particular king ended up setting a code of laws, a code of ethics, for people that actually extended, you know, that whole Mesopotamia area from the Persian Gulf all the way to the east. He established this all these different statutes and ordinances. And one of them was that if your wife was barren, was unable to have children, then you could technically, legally have a child through your wife's handmaid, okay? Actually, your wife's slave, if you want to really, you know, get down to it. And that child would be raised, you know, as your own, all right? And like I said, back in those days, I mean, it was a real disgrace for a woman not to have children, a married woman. Okay, so there was a tremendous importance put on women to have children. And it was very humiliating for a woman who didn't have children. And it was very, not only humiliating, but their futures were very uncertain because it was a legitimate means to divorce your wife if she wasn't fruitful in that capacity, that way. So here's a situation where there's this wrestling going on, and so Rachel figures, hey, you know, my sister now has four children. I've got none. So now she gives Jacob Bilhah as his wife so she could bear Rachel a son. So Bilhah bears a son named Dan, and then she bears him another son. And when Leah sees this, well, she gives Jacob her handmaid, which is Zilpah. Okay? And so we got this population race going on here. Okay? Now, here's Jacob. All Jacob wanted was one wife. He worked for one woman. Now he's being torn apart by four women. You know, I mean, I don't really envy the guy. I mean, one is hard enough to keep in line. I got four of them, you know, right? I mean, ew. Here we go. Now he's got four of them. And now he's being, you know, finding himself in a situation where there's tit for tat, and there's this resentment, this jealousy, this bitterness that's going on between the two sisters. And so you got this population war or this escalation that's going on now. All right. In this particular situation, Jacob is really being dealt with in this feud that's going on. And he really wanted nothing to do with it, but as you know, this is God again dealing with him and working in his life for his own, you know, divine purposes. But look what happens to Rachel. Now, keep in mind here, Rachel is the one that he loves. I mean, he's gone head over heels for Rachel. He's so deeply in love with Rachel. But Rachel, in her distress, okay, is becoming more and more resentful, becoming more and more jealous, becoming more and more unpleasant to be around. I mean, Jacob is coming home now to a nag. He's coming home now to a woman.
I don't see that in there.
Now, wait a minute. Okay.
Don't be adding to the Bible.
We'll wait till you hear me out, then you can disagree with me, okay? He's coming home now to a woman who's in a sour disposition. And she's complaining to him. And she's saying, give me children or I die. In other words, I get the impression, I could be wrong here, but you give me children or I'm going to kill myself. Mm-hmm. Is that too much to read into that? I mean, she's really, really becoming sour. All right? And now her sour disposition is beginning to grate on him. You know, and he's coming home at night thinking, oh, man, what am I going to have to deal with now? And one look will tell him, oh, here she is in this mood again. You know, will tell a man a lot. And so, finally, you know, he blows up at her. He can only take so much. And I think this is something that we need to, I don't want to read a lot into, but simply, hey, this is human nature. All right? Rachel has become resentful and she's become bitter, which is causing a difficulty in their marriage and is causing pain in their household. I think what we can derive from this is this. Instead of Rachel becoming a nag, she really needed to seek God's face and recognize, hey, this isn't Jacob's fault. This is what God is doing. I mean, Jacob put his finger right on the problem. He says, am I in the place of God? He's the one that closed your womb. I mean, I don't know what you want me to do about it. So he blows up at her. And there's a lot of tension there and there's a lot of grief there. All right, and I'm sure that he was probably, as over the years, trying to be as sympathetic and understanding as he possibly could be. But now she's taking it out on him, and it's causing a lot of friction in their relationship. All right, and all I want to say is this. If we look at this situation, we can say, what could Rachel have done to avoid a stressful situation in her marriage? Well, as painful as it was for her, and as humiliating as it was for her, okay, she still had the affection of her husband, which I think could have not only been a consolation, but at the same token, in her grief, she should have sought the Lord in a much deeper way. Now, obviously she did, but, you know, rather than seek God and wait upon God and look to God, okay, to answer her prayers, she gets in a situation where she says she's become so resentful of her sister that now she gives Jacob her handmaid, Bilhah, to bear her a son. And so Bilhah bears him a son, and they named him Dan. Now, we know that Dan means judge, or God is my vindicator or my judge. But I think what's kind of interesting is this. If you look at Dan, the Bible says some very interesting things about Dan. When Jacob is giving his blessings on his deathbed to his 12 sons, this is what he says of Dan. He said, Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path that bites the horse's heel so that the rider falls backwards. What that means is kind of really speculative, but it is also a mention of this in the book of Jeremiah, in Jeremiah 8:16, where Jeremiah had said, from Dan is heard the snorting of his horses and the sound of the neighing of his stallions. The whole land quakes, for they come and devour the land in its fullness, and the city and its inhabitants. For behold, I am sending serpents against you, adders for which there is no charm, and they will bite and bite you, declares the Lord. Now, I don't want to read a whole lot in this, but, okay, from various scriptures, it appears that there's a prophecy in regards to Dan. And the prophecy basically boils down to this, that the Antichrist will come from the tribe of Dan, and that God will use the Antichrist as a means to chasten, to judge the world, and especially his own people. All right? Now, I know that Jerry Falwell found himself in a lot of hot water just this past week because he came out publicly and said that the Antichrist will be a Jew. Well, now the Jews are all up in arms and they're throwing stones at him. But the fact remains, hey, it's not meant by any stretch of the imagination to be anti-Semitic. You're just looking at the word and you're seeing, hey, it's very apparent that the Antichrist will be of Jewish descent. It's not to slander the Jewish people at all. Because remember what Jesus said on his way to the cross. He's carrying the cross and he meets the women of Jerusalem. If I'm not mistaken, it was that particular time, he says, weep not for, and they were weeping for him. He says, don't weep for me, but weep for your children and your children's children. You know, he said, if they do this when the grass is green, what are they going to do when it's dry? Meaning, if they do this when there's a situation where they should have accepted their Messiah, what's going to happen when the situations, you know, are against the people? When Jesus had one time said in the Gospels, he said this, I have come in my Father's name, and you have rejected me. He said, another will come in his own name, and you will accept him. In other words, Jesus was saying this, I've come as the Messiah, and you've rejected me. Another's going to come, and you're going to accept him. Well, there's no way that Jewish people will accept a non-Jew as their Messiah. That's just plain common sense, isn't it? That's just plain logic, common sense. Therefore, the Antichrist will be a Jew. But the Jewish people will mistaken him for their Messiah. And I believe that it's going to be through the tribe of Dan that the Antichrist will come because of the prophecy that was made in regards to him. Now, I know I've kind of gone off on a tangent here, but what I'm saying is here's another situation where people try to take things into their own hands and do things their own way, and look at the far-reaching effects that it has. Remember when Abraham and his wife Sarah felt like, well, God isn't going to give us a child the way he promises he would, so we got to do something about it. And so what do? They bring Hagar into the picture, and then Ishmael comes along, and Ishmael has 12 sons. And basically, from the 12 tribes of Ishmael, you have the Arab nations, which are constantly at the very throats of Israel today. So we're talking about things that happened 4,000 years ago are still having tremendous repercussions today. Because what? Because people didn't wait on God's timing. They took it into their hands to do things their own way. Okay? So,
you're deducing that he's Jewish, but doesn't the Bible even say it in more clear prophecy?
Well, doesn't it come out and say the Antichrist would be a Jew, okay? But you put it all together, especially in the book of Revelation and various other portions of Scripture, you see that he has to be a Jew, because if he was not of Jewish descent, there's no way that they would be accepted as the Messiah of the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation today, if you go over to Israel today, they will tell you, the Orthodox Jews especially, they will tell you they are waiting for their Messiah. They are expecting him at any time. Okay? And when he does show up, they're going to be all primed to accept him as their Messiah. The problem is he's going to be the Antichrist. Okay? And what's going to happen is that the beginning of the seven-year tribulation, the Antichrist is going to come upon the world as a savior, as a hero. And he's actually going to enter into a covenant with the Jewish people that's going to last 7 years. The problem is, 3.5 years into that covenant that he makes with the Jews, he's going to break that covenant. He's going to set up his own image in their temple that's about to be built, and it'll be built at that particular time, and he's going to come in and declare himself to be God. And then the Jews, most of the Jewish people's eyes will be open, and they will recognize that he is not the Messiah, and then he will declare holy war against the Jews, and tremendous persecution and suffering and death are going to transpire because of Dan, who is a serpent in the way. Okay, who's going to bite the writer's heel, who will fall backwards. Okay, I mean, it doesn't come out and just spell it out, you know, black and white. But you look at the overall picture that the Bible paints, and it's very obvious that that's what's going to transpire. Okay, and just winding this down, they're beginning to name their different sons. As a matter of fact, they end up having 12 sons altogether, and all of their names are very significant. Okay, Reuben meant look a son, Simeon meant the Lord hears, and Levi meant attachment, Judah means praise, Zebulun means prince, Issachar means reward, Dan means judge or vindicate, and Gad means good fortune or fortunate. Naphtali means wrestling, Joseph means may God add another or more sons, and Benjamin means son of my right hand, and Asher means glad. Okay, every one of these sons have this very significant name that is given to them, you know, by their mothers, but a lot of it was as a result of this struggle that was going on between these two sisters. Okay, but God, again, was working it out for his own divine purposes and for, you know, all of history, in a sense. And it says here in verse 10, it says, and Leah's maid, Zilpha, bore Jacob a son. And Leah said, how fortunate, and she named him Gad. And Leah's maid, Zilpha, bore Jacob a second son. And Leah said, happy am I, for women will call me happy. So she named him Asher. Now in the days of the wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother. And Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter for you to take my husband? And would you take my son's mandrakes also? So Rachel said, therefore, he may lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes. So Jacob came in from the field in the evening. Then Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come to me into me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." So he lay with her that night. And God gave heed to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, "God has given me my wages because I have gave my maid to my husband." So she named him Issachar. And Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Jacob and said, "God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons." So she named him Zebulun. But and afterwards she bore him a daughter and named her Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God gave heed to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." And she named him Joseph, saying, "May the Lord give me another son." Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go on my own to my own place and to my own country." Okay, before we go any further, now here's a situation where Leah's oldest son, Reuben, this is a time, I guess, around in the spring when he picked up these mandrakes, and the mandrakes were there's something, I guess they bloom all over Palestine around May or in the spring, and there was kind of a superstition that was attached to mandrakes, and they felt that this was a real strong type of aphrodisiac or some kind of, you know, a plant that would enhance not just sexual powers but fertility. Okay, and so Reuben's bringing these mandrakes home to his mother, and he brings them to his mother Leah, and when Rachel sees it, she asked for some of the mandrakes because she figures, well, this is what I need to make me fertile. And the mandrakes, I guess one of the superstitions that arose from the mandrakes is making a person fertile is the fact that their roots had a fleshy color, and sometimes they even almost had the shape of human form and their roots. And so they came up with this, I don't know, superstition that mandrakes would enhance a person's not just sexual abilities but also their fertility or their power to conceive. So now Leah gets, you know, all ticked off, and she says to her sister Rachel, she says, "Hey, you got some nerve asking me for my mandrakes when you've already taken away my husband." And so Rachel's so desperate, she says, "Okay, listen, you can have Jacob tonight, I'll give him to you, just give me your mandrakes." So what happens, she gives, you know, Jacob over to Leah that night, but Leah is the one who gets pregnant, and the mandrakes don't do any good to Rachel. Okay, as the story unfolds, Leah ends up bearing six sons, and then she also, through her handmaid Zilpha, bears a couple more. So in actuality, she has eight sons. Well, now finally, God, hears Rachel's cry or Rachel's plea, and He opens her womb, and she bears a son. And God, in His own good timing, you know, gives her a son, and she names him Joseph, meaning to may he add another. The fact that they mention the mandrakes, I mean, I just want to say this in passing. I mean, the Bible mentions this, but I don't think the Bible in any way, shape, or form endorses such a superstition as that. It just simply tells us how people believed in that particular day. And it really, it's God who has complete control over whether a woman bears a child or not, or conceives or not. So it says in that verse 24, and she named him Joseph, saying, "May the Lord give me another son." Now, in verse 25, now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know that my service with you, which I have rendered to you." But Laban said to him, "If now it pleases you, stay with me, for I have divine that the Lord has blessed me on your account." And he continued, "Name me your wages, and I will give it to you." But he said to him, "You yourself know that I have served you, and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and now it has increased to a multitude. For the Lord has blessed you wherever I have turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" So he said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything if you will do this one thing for me. I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every spotted and speckled sheep and every black one among the lambs and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages." Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen. And Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. So he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats and everyone with the white in it and all the black ones among the sheep and gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days a journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even in the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink. And they made it when they came to drink. So the flocks made it by the rods, and their flocks brought forth stripes, speckled and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks a face towards the stripes and all the black in the flock of Laban, and he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, it came about whenever the stronger of the flock were mating that Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutter so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in, so that the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Okay, now just concluding this for tonight, there's a couple of things about this that especially confusing or at least bewildering to a lot of us when we read this particular story. But what happened, what's unfolded here is that now Jacob finds himself with a huge family and he figures, hey, it's about time that I start providing for my own household instead of doing everything for Laban. So he says, well, let me go back to my own home. But Laban wants this guy around because he says to him, I discerned that the Lord is with you. Okay, it was obvious. Okay, he says he divined here. In other words, there was no divination involved in it. Laban knew just by looking at how he had been prospered since Jacob has been there. Now, Jacob's been there 14 years. And in that 14 years, Laban has become a very wealthy man. He's got all kinds of wealth in regards to herds and flocks and sheep and goats and whatnot. Well, Jacob says this. He says, okay, I'll serve you. You don't have to give me anything, but this is what I want you to do. He says, remove all the speckled and the spotted and the striped and the patched sheep and goats from your herd. All the black sheep, okay, from your herd. Remove them all. And then any future black sheep or off-colored goats, whether they be, you know, spotted or speckled or striped or whatever or patched, they will belong to me. Well, Laban thought, well, I'm getting a good deal here. Because in a flock of sheep, how many times do you see a black sheep? Not often, right? Right? I mean, Laban thought, oh gosh, you know, one sheep out of 100 is going to be black and he's going to get this. So Laban thought, oh, this is a good deal, man. I'm coming out ahead here. All right? And so what he does, he takes away all the black sheep and the speckled and the spotted goats and whatnot, and he removes them 3 days' journey. This is how much they trust each other. They remove them 3 days' journey, you know, from his herd. Now, Jacob's wages are going to basically consist of whatever black sheep come out of this flock and whatever, you know, speckled, spotted, or patched, ringed goats come out of it. They all belong to me. If they're brown, you know, off color in any way, they belong to me. So that seemed like a real good deal to Laban. But what happens now is that Jacob is beginning to find a situation where a lot of the sheep are producing off-colored offspring. All right. Now, we have given information or detail here where it says that what Jacob would do when his lambs and his sheep would go down to water in the trough, that Jacob would take these trees and he'd peel the bark off the trees and make these striped incisions in the trees, and they were almond trees and various trees he would do this to. Now, we might think, well, what did that have to do with the sheep becoming off-colored or speckled? Well, I don't think it had anything to do at all with it, okay? And anybody who deals with husbandry is going to tell you, well, simply because a sheep happens to see it, stripes or speckled, that doesn't mean they're going to produce striped or speckled offspring. But what it did do was this. Apparently there is a mating season with the sheep and the goats. And that is brought on very much by, you know, the smell or the aroma of certain trees. And so Jacob takes the almond trees and these other trees, and he cuts into them, and he strips them, and in such a way that when the sheep and the flock get around them, that I believe the sight of them and the aroma that's giving off triggers that chemical reaction in their brain where it's almost like mating season. So he's doing this to get the sheep, to get the goats to mate, you know, and he does it in such a way that he makes sure that any feeble ones, you know, he keeps this procedure away from, so that they don't start mating, because he knows that if the feeble flock start mating, then they're just going to produce, you know, feeble offspring. Well, Jacob does this, and he's getting all off-colored sheep, or black sheep, or off-colored goats. All right. Now, when we read this, you have to keep something in mind. Okay, this really doesn't have anything to do with Jacob cutting these various trees branches, okay, and exposing them. What cutting and exposing them does, and I think it triggers their mating instinct, and it causes them to mate. But I don't want to. We don't have time to go through this chapter 31. But when we get into chapter 31, we find out the reason why this is happening. And the reason why it's happening is that Jacob, had a vision. Basically, he had had a dream. And in that dream, it was God who showed him what to do. In other words, let me just read it real quick, because we don't have time to go through it, but we're going to go through it next week. But in the 31st chapter, Jacob says this, beginning with verse 10. He says, "And it came about at the time when the flocks were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats were mating, which were mating were striped, speckled, and molted. Then the angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob, and I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and molted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth." So it's basically Jacob, you know, declared his wages on the basis of a vision that God had given him. And God had basically showed him that all the spotted and the molted and the multicolored animals were going to become dominant in the flock. So that's why Jacob asked for that particular wage. All right? So it really didn't have anything to do with them. I mean, the color of the sheep or the flock didn't have, or the goats didn't have anything to do with Jacob cutting these various barks and stripes off of these trees. But what it did do was it triggered the mating instinct in the animals where they would mate more frequently. That's what he did. And as a result, it was God who was orchestrating the whole situation, you know, to make Jacob wealthy. Because God had said to Jacob, he says, "I've seen everything that Laban's done to you." Okay, so when we read on further in that 31st chapter, we're going to find out that when Laban sees what's happening, Laban's going to see all these sheep are coming out off-colored. And then he's going to end up changing the wages. He's going to change the agreement. But every time he changes his agreement, the reverse happens. So God is really beginning to alter the whole situation for Jacob, because he has seen that now he has served this guy for 14 years and he's going to end up serving him another 6 years. Okay. And the guy's cheating him and deceiving him and conning him the whole way. So I know that when you read that, you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? But what it really had to do was a vision that Jacob had, that God had given him, that God was going to do this. All right, so God was in total control of the situation. Nobody has anything you want to add or share?